There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Hi, I'm Masaba Gupta. Each week on How I Masaba from Luminary, I talk to one incredible woman about how they do, well, them. These are the inspirational mindsets, necessary daily practices, and only funny in hindsight experiences that have defined and continue to drive our culture's greatest. Reputations are a funny thing. Sometimes they can be these burdens that people carry, and sometimes they become tools that help us move forward through tough times. And being a public figure, this is the reality I live with every day of my life. I have seen, though, more often than not, that once you peel away a big reputation, there is a person with nuanced layers and stories that are much more interesting. Today, I am going to try and do just that. My guest today is one of India's most prominent legal minds. While she's known to be one of the most formidable lawyers around, anyone she has worked with will attest to her ability to deal with sensitive topics with grace, humanity, and sheer empathy. I'm personally so intrigued by her unique perspective on doing things the legal way and the right way, and everything in between. Today, I'm speaking with the acclaimed lawyer, Mrinalini Deshmukh. Mrinalini, thank you so much. We're really, really happy to have you here on the podcast. I want to backtrack on your story a little bit. You decided to take a sabbatical from law when you had your first child, but what's really interesting to me is that you got into family court also pretty much by fluke.
Completely. It was destiny, I would say, completely. And not that I had any special skills or any kind of special qualifications or a desire to do that. I took a break or a sabbatical for nearly 15 years because both my kids, my son and my daughter, were born gap of 4 years. There was no one. My husband is a professional, so he's very busy. We live in a joint family with my mother-in-law. She was also a teacher, professor of law, professor of Marathi. Wow. So she was very busy. And I didn't believe in leaving my kids with nannies and things. I don't know, maybe I come from the old school. I said, no, I have to be there. So I took, and by the time they started going to school, they were studying Bum Scottish. By the time they started going to a regular school, say it was from 8:30 to 3:30, that's the time I thought I should study. Mm. I did my master's. I started teaching. And by which time we shifted to Bandra.
Yeah.
And Bandra was just next to the family. My residence was just next to the family court. Mm. And then I said that if I have to combine my children coming back home and I have to be home by 3:34 by the time their school bus comes, I cannot do that if I'm working. Earlier I was working in the High Court. Mm. Then I said, I must do something. And I said, let me take up family law. It's just next door. And I went with a lot of hesitation. After 15 years, it's like you're a fresh law graduate. You have all those butterflies in your stomach and you are very nervous and things like that. I started with making small applications. And I guess
that's how it happened.
That's how it started.
That's interesting. But, you know, I also think that I wanted to ask you this. What is it about practicing law? And you just said that coming back after 15 years was like coming back fresh. But what is it about practicing law that drew you to it in the first place and also sort of called you back? What is that one thing?
So, to be very honest to you, it is also my upbringing. Mm-hmm. My father was a principal of Government Law College. He was a professor of constitutional law. Mm-hmm. And one more thing about him was that he was very closely associated with Dr. Ambedkar those days when the Constituent Assembly was discussing about the drafting of the Constitution. I have grown up in that environment. And my dad was one person at the dinner table. He would share all these things. So that interest in the subject of law was so natural because we had it for breakfast, lunch and dinner.
Yeah.
And that's when we thought of going to law. That's how my father also always wanted me to be a practicing lawyer, but never always he wanted me to be a teacher also. He said, because you can give it back to the society what you've learned, and you can, if you're a good teacher, you bring about good students and good generation of lawyers. So that is the reason law was always there. Though I had taken a choice, it was my choice that I decided to stay back and look after my kids. Within me, I was restless. Within me, I wanted to do. And that is why I said that between my two children, I did my master's in law, which was I had to go only once a week to the college to attend and the rest time. And I can tell you very honestly, my daughter was on my lap. I'm just rocking her like this and I'm studying my... So this is the way I have done. And it's great. It was great.
And it paid off.
I'm not aware of that. But I was determined and I said, why not? And I think it was also very challenging for me because I said, why not? Why should I not try it? But if you ask me even now, what would you like to do in the heart of my heart? I would love to do constitutional law. Seriously. I mean, yes, I do family law. Maybe I've gained a lot of experience by doing a lot of things and I've been able to deliver. Yeah. But my innermost desire has always been to do constitutional law.
Yeah. Maybe the next phase.
I don't know.
You know, there's a very interesting thing you've mentioned in other interviews. You said corporate law deals with objects and family law deals with people.
Absolutely.
And I know it's a job for you, it's work for you, but do you ever feel the human side in you kick in and be like, I'm a bit disillusioned by what's happening in the world today? For example, we all know marriages aren't what they used to be, right? And we're seeing more and more, sometimes mutual, sometimes bitter separations. But are you disillusioned at all as the human and not the lawyer?
So as a human, I do find it very painful. Sometimes I wonder why can't people compromise? Why can't people understand each other? So there are no perfect marriages. There are no perfect couples. It's all a degree of adjustment and compromises.
Yeah.
Maybe the earlier generation, that's my generation, probably grew up with that one had to compromise. So probably we also sacrificed a lot of things, which maybe today's generation does not feel the need. And we did it, maybe it was a culturally ingrained, socially ingrained, family ingrained things which happened. We never felt that we did something like a sacrifice. For example, if you tell somebody today, a mother, that you take 15 years of break and get back, they'll say, have you lost it?
They want to be back in 2 months.
Yeah, they would say, well, how can you do that? I mean, we can't even think about it. But this was something which I felt I had to do it. Now, whether it was my conditioning, whether it was my upbringing, it was my values. Today, the only regret if I have for this thing is that maybe had I not taken a break, I would have done constitutional law. But otherwise, I've gone back to practice.
Yeah.
And I've done family law.
Yeah.
And I worked towards it. That's it.
That's it. Yeah. But you're not. You don't feel that in you.
So coming back to this, I do feel a little things. But I also, my profession has taught me that tolerance is good. But tolerance does not mean that you take anything that is just dished out to anybody, whether it's a man or a woman.
Yeah.
Because your self-respect, your dignity, and the respect in the relationship, I always say that, and probably you must have read it somewhere. Mm-hmm. I said, for me, a marriage is not about love. It's about mutual respect and trust.
Yeah.
I said, love is like the icing on the cherry. Of course, you need it. You need romance. You need passion. You need all these things. But these are the things which are more for the window dressing.
Yes, the dressing.
Yeah. What you really need is mutual respect and trust. Once you have that, that is the edifice on which you can build up the institution.
Yeah.
So I guess this is where sometimes I do feel that you cannot, if there is a lack of trust, there are allegations which are made about character, etc. Yeah. I don't think any woman or any man for that matter should be taking it lying down, because there is, you have your self-respect also. Yeah. I mean, you have to give in into a relationship doesn't mean that you become a martyr.
Yeah.
So you can't, I mean, you have to find somewhere in between. Yes, the balance in between the two. And that's where sometimes I do feel that what is happening in the society needs to be sort of, corrected, in that sense that then people need to stand up for what their rights are. But at the same time, then I feel when there are children involved and when there are things involved, should you consider your importance or should you give more importance to children? I mean, it's a dilemma. I will not say whether A is right or B is right. I sometimes believe, and I tell this in my interviews also, that for children, it's better to have two happy homes than one unhappy home. So not have one home where the parents are absolutely fighting and, you know, sort of squabbling every single day.
Yeah.
They can't take it. It's a very toxic environment. Yeah. Then might as well have two homes which are happy homes.
Yeah.
Mom home, happy home. Dad home, happy home. And you spend your time.
And hopefully there's a friendship between them.
Yes, yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So I think I'm not able to tell you exactly what is a correct way of looking at it.
Right.
Again, it depends on the facts and circumstances of the case. But I must tell you one thing, Masaba, that, I mean, this is what most of my clients also say. The first thing when a client comes to me, I don the robe of a shrink.
Yes.
So I am not a qualified shrink at all. I'm a lawyer, as you know. But with experience, I try and understand. Mm. And then I understand that maybe it's an overreaction. Mm. Maybe somebody had a fight last night and they'll think, I'm going to the lawyer and I'm going to call her.
Yeah.
So that you need to, first thing you need to talk to the client and calm him or calm her down.
Mm.
You are not to fuel any more anger in the client is the first thing I realize. However angry or agitated the person may come to you in that state of mind. As a lawyer, you need to douse that fire. And then there is some reasoning that happens. And then there is a dialogue. And then we find out from that conversation, how serious is the matter? Can we make amends in it? Can I suggest therapy? Can I suggest counselors to them? And say, listen guys, just try this out for 3-4 months. I'm here. I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
If things work out, well and good.
Yeah.
Let's meet only socially over coffee.
Yeah.
But if it, God forbid, doesn't work out, start from where we've left.
Yeah.
What's the big hurry in doing it today itself?
Correct.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing that you need to do it within 24 hours.
Yeah.
So I think that's one advice that I always start with my first meetings, depending on the seriousness and things about it. Need to douse the fire. Because people come to me in an exceedingly agitated, inflamed state of mind.
Yeah. Not thinking rationally sometimes.
Very irrationally, overreaction. Mm. And there's a lot of hurt and pain, which is sometimes, you can't explain why it is there.
Yeah.
But first, probably they're right. Mm. But for me to understand, I need to understand them in a better, calmer situation than in their overreaction.
Yeah, to understand the core of who they are.
Yes, of course. Yes. Otherwise, how can you give an advice?
Yeah.
I can't be advising to reactions.
Yeah.
I have to advise to the facts and the circumstances.
But are you seeing a shift in this balance that you were talking about between a man and a woman? Are you seeing a shift because the woman suddenly in society has become financially independent? Are you seeing that that's changed the tolerance levels?
100%, 100%. I'll tell you one more thing. Initially, when I started my practice, and I'm in this practice the last 20 years, initially when I started, girls used to come to me. They would be only accompanied by their friend or a cousin.
Not the parents.
Never the parents. And I would ask them, what about your parents? No, my parents are saying, no, you please adjust. Please do this, but I can't do it. So they get a friend, they get a... Today, increasingly, I'm seeing the parents they are in the forefront. They don't want their daughter to suffer in a given situation. They look for a lawyer. They seek an appointment. They come with their daughter and they try and see whatever help that they can sort of afford to the child and to their daughter and what are the legal rights, etc. So today I'm seeing that shift, that the family is supportive, the girl's family I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, of course, the financial independence.
Yeah.
Because earlier, you always felt that you were a burden on your parents.
Mm.
And then you got married. Now, are you going to go back, tossed back to the parents who are not all come from a good background?
Absolutely.
And everybody has constraints. And then what do? I don't want to be an additional liability. So I might as well just suffer in silence.
Mm.
Today, that financial independence has given a sense of self-respect, a sense of pride, and a sense of dignity.
Yeah.
That even if I am not getting the same lifestyle that I get in this, but if I can survive, I want to lead a very positive and a peaceful, independent life.
On your own terms, hopefully.
So yes, financial interest. But there are some people who will say this too much of financial independence is causing breakdown of marriages. I don't believe in that.
Nor do
that
I.
That theory, I don't believe in that because it just gives, it empowers a woman. Mm-hmm. And not that the woman takes a step, and I'm making a very responsible statement, of breaking the home only as a last resort. It's never the first option. After emotionally, mentally talking, everybody getting everything, then she does that. So it's not only, and this is not only about a financially independent woman or a dependent woman. This is about every woman.
Every woman. Yeah.
Maybe money just gives her that comfort to walk out tomorrow morning. I don't have to think about it.
Right.
That's the only difference. But otherwise, I wouldn't it takes a lot of effort for a woman to really take a call that, listen, it's over and I need to move on.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. I think it takes a lot to make such a big shift in your own life. You wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
You wouldn't do it.
It can be emotionally very, very sort of, you know, draining.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Yeah, but talking about women, and there's a very interesting, many interesting terms that have been used to describe you. And the first time that I heard of you, someone said, oh, she's a shark. She's a shark in the courtroom. And you've been called a tigress. You've been called many things, brutal things, but also kind of an ode to your intelligence in a way, right? But do you think that if it were a man in your position, who was as articulate and as sharp and as just getting the job done, would these terms not have been used? Do you think it's because you're a woman who is so...
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. Because then that man is a great lawyer.
Yes. But you're just a shark.
Yeah.
A man-eating shark.
Thank you for the compliments. But yes, I think it's also because... they don't expect women to be the way it is. But I'll tell you something, Masab. I have to be very... this is what my... not my image. Maybe this is what I am in the courtroom. But I'm completely different when I'm outside the court. And the reason for that is, as I said when I was discussing, that when I talk to clients, and I am known to settle a lot of matters and not fewer litigation. And this is something which I consider it to be one of the virtues that I want to pursue, and I want to sort of give it to the next generation. Family matters have to be dealt with a lot of sensitivity. These are not property matters. These are not corporate matters. These are not matters which are dealing to some land parcel, etc. Yeah. We are dealing with human emotions. We are dealing with children. We are dealing with men, women, etc. Please, let's not get them and drag them to courts. Let's use courts as a last resort, if it has to push comes to shove, as they call it. But try and resolve everything with a dialogue. You agree, you agree to disagree, then you again meet, you again agree to disagree. You have these 3, 4, 5 rounds. And sometimes, you know, reasonableness does dawn upon parties. And it's a duty of a lawyer to impress upon the client the futility of a litigation. It's sounding very strange.
But
it is a good lawyer who impresses and makes the litigant realize the futility of a litigation. Because a long-drawn litigation is a drain on your time, your emotions, your money, and your peace. And then there's no price for all these things.
That's amazing. That's a great line. But, you know, I've had many guests on this podcast from different professions. And we always talk about the future generations, right? Like you just mentioned. Like with Faye D'Souza, I remember she said this very powerful thing where if you're a young professional who wants to be a journalist, You need to believe every day when you wake up that you can make a change and that you can make a difference. Anita Dongri and I were talking about fashion, which sometimes can be a bit of a, you know, people think of it as vain, just as an industry. And we both agreed that even if you're deeply passionate about this industry, it's okay to continue to work as an employee and not start your own business. This is really stuff that is difficult to learn from books, right? You don't realize this until you've been in the industry for a few years. And I want to ask you that one thing is, especially in family law, what is that one thing that you think the younger professionals just absolutely need to know today? You mentioned a great thing just before this. Is there anything else that they should keep at the front?
So which is what I'm saying, and I feel, and I've been canvassing this across, that young professionals who enter the family law, I think there should be an orientation workshop for them. And why am I saying that? Why should it not be for the other lawyers? Because other lawyers who deal with corporate law or deal with real estate and things like that, they have to deal with the law, with the facts and the circumstances. Yeah, when you choose to take family law as your profession, you need to be groomed in a manner to understand that you're dealing with human beings. You're dealing with human emotion, and you owe a sense of allegiance and duty towards yourself and towards the society by ensuring that these marriages are not wrecked, the homes are not destroyed, long drawn litigations do not is only drain on the people's emotions, finances and the peace. And lastly, and more important, there is no winning or losing in this case. There is no winner, there's no loser. Unfortunately, both are, I would say, losers. So let's make even this a little more graceful, a little more dignified, and give them the right direction to deal with it. I'm not saying compromise with the rights of a wife or a child or a mother or, sorry, of a father or a man, which is there. But be fair, be humane, and be balanced in what you do without compromising the interest of your client. And I think you can do that. One can really do that.
Yeah. It's a learned skill. It is a learned skill. Mrinalini, your process is very unique to me. Just the entire pipeline of meeting people, then talking to them. You said you play the role of a shrink. But pretty much for any industry, I feel like you kind of need to pitch. It's like even in design, I think in a sense you say, okay, why pick my lehenga over someone else's, right? I don't know if it's the same thing, probably a bad example, but similar zone. But like we said, family law is different. You're dealing with people, you're dealing with emotions. But you've also said that it's your duty as a lawyer to make sure that you're being compassionate and also being practical at the same time. How do you negotiate with yourself and your principles when you're making decisions about or just giving advice to say, okay, now this is done. I think it's time that we move forward with, say, a separation in certain aspects. But you come across as somebody who's also had a super, super solid marriage yourself at home. How do you negotiate with yourself and your ideas of marriage and put that part aside?
So Masaba, there are two parts of it. I completely, compartmentalize myself as an individual and in my personal life and in my professional life. In fact, I say it very often in a very lighter vein that after seeing all the problems in my professional life, that helps me to work on my marriage. Because then I realize, okay, this is where I'm going wrong or this is where everyone needs to make an amend. But that's on a lighter note. But I think if you are true to yourself and if you believe what advice you are giving to the client, that itself takes a lot of burden off the client's, concerns and the issues which are there. Because you have to be very honest to them. It's like a doctor.
Yeah,
you have to be very, very honest that this is what your situation is. This is the malady. This is the problem. The cure is there. Should your cure be worse than what your malady is, you have to weigh the options. At what cost are we doing this? You know, we have a lot of these cases, I must talk to you about it, that fathers don't get a visitation to their children.
Yes.
Some women can be very nasty. We are all women here. We all stand for the women. But some mothers can be very nasty and they do not allow the fathers to spend time with their children. Right. And I think it's a great disservice to the children. And whenever I fight or if I'm appearing for a mother, and if one of my clients is likely to do that, I literally hold her back and I said, then I do not want to appear for you because I believe a child needs both the parents. Unless the other parent is an alcoholic and, extreme, something lunatic and it's harmful for the child.
Right.
But I said, you have a vendetta or you have a vengeance against him. A bad husband is not a bad father. A bad husband is not a bad father, or vice versa, a bad mother. Bad wife is not a bad mother. So in that case, you have to keep this aside. Do not use the child to get back at your spouse.
At your spouse.
Because if you think you're going to have the last laugh because your husband is not going to get the child, you're not realizing it's your child who's going to be hurt in the process. And once you understand that, you don't want your child to grow up in a messed up way, right? Mm-hmm. You want your child to have a balanced thing. As I said, that you, it's better to have two happy homes than one unhappy home. Yeah. And you owe it to your child to give him two happy homes, which means time with his father. And then you, otherwise you're doing disservice to your child.
Yeah.
You should think that, no, I'm taking care of my child. You are not taking care of the child.
It's the opposite.
Absolutely. Mm. That's, I'm very firm. So these kind of things, I'm very, very firm about it. I have, maybe to be honest to you, lost a few people say, okay, if that's what your view is, we may want to take somebody else. I said, fine. But then I want to be true to what I believe. In. Otherwise, then there are a lot of things that happen.
Correct.
That can go on.
Yeah. You work crazy hours. Are you still, how many hours do you work?
12.
Okay. But high power packed hours.
And these are all, because we have Zooms and we have phone calls.
Yeah.
And these are all high intense matters.
Yes, absolutely.
Because everybody is in that zone. And we have different time zones because we have clients from outside the country and all that.
Yeah.
So it amounts to around 12 to 13 hours.
Yes. But your brain is always on.
Yes,
right?
It is on. Yes.
What is the idea of rest for you?
Good. Question. Good question. So the idea of rest for me is, so obviously my exercise is in the morning. That's one thing I don't compromise.
Okay, I'm so happy to hear that.
Yes, whether it's yoga, whether it's my walks, whether it's whatever things which are, they really keep me going. I'm fond of theater, so sometimes that's where it is. I'm fond of a lot of reading, but I can't read too much because otherwise also I'm doing a lot of reading.
Correct.
And you end up reading, it's really putting a lot of strain on my... and most importantly, I mean, really, really being with my children because I learn so much from them. I learn a lot from them and I feel, and then, you know, the standard thing which every daughter and son tells his mother, oh, mom, come on, you don't know. Yes, I don't know. So please
which
tell
is
me.
Why I'm spending time with you.
Yes. So yeah, I love being with them. So Saturday, Sundays are not Saturdays, actually, only Sundays are only family lunches and things like that. And that's very... Yes, but I don't get these usual holidays and vacations and all that No.
I mean, I think people keep asking me what I do and I love the beach. But even when I'm on the beach, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
It's just a prettier place to think out.
I know work-life balance has to be maintained. I do believe in that.
Yeah.
Maybe difficult to put in practice at times. That's all I can say.
But what is the one thing that refreshes you? Is it the workout in the morning?
Yes.
That's the one.
The yoga part
same
of it.
Same here.
The yoga is same really here. So energizing.
Same.
I mean, when you do it, you feel so tired and you want to say, oh, it's not getting over. The time is still on.
Yeah.
But after that, you feel so energized.
Yes, really.
More than anything else.
Yeah. And these are the last few rapid fire questions.
Right.
Is Mumbai the best city for you? Or if you could move to any other city in the world to practice, what would it be?
Never. Only Mumbai.
Really?
Only Mumbai. Not even Delhi. Not even Bangalore. No. Mumbai is... I've always been a Mumbai girl.
Yeah.
Born, brought up, everything here.
Yeah.
So I would never trade off Mumbai for anything in this world. Forget London, New York. You just name it. No.
I agree. I think the pace of the city keeps me
going. No. It's the spirit. It's spirit. Amazing. It's amazing.
Mm. What do you like to read apart from what you have to read? Do you have
crime
a book
fiction.
Recommendation?
Crime fiction.
Really?
Yeah. I love to read crime fiction.
Oh. Do we see another channel opening up there?
I don't know.
Apart from constitutional law. What's the one debate that you really want to sit on a panel for?
Uniform Civil Code.
Uniform Civil Code. Could you tell us?
I'll tell you what Uniform Civil Code is. Mm-hmm. Today we have personal laws.
Yeah.
And that personal laws are one is a Hindu, one is a Christian, one is a Muslim. We have different laws.
Yeah.
We have no uniformity in them. And as a result of which, the maximum compromises have to be made are by the Muslim women. Mm-hmm. Because they are governed by the Sharia laws. And they are not governed by the civil code, which otherwise you and me are governed by that.
Mm.
So I do want to bring about uniformity in them so that there could be a lot of improvement in their you know, their whatever their rights are and the recognition of them as such. So I think uniform civil, and this is nothing to do political.
Yeah.
I'm away from politics, of course. But this as a practitioner of family law and having dealt, because I deal with Muslim laws. So like this triple talaq judgment which came was an amazing thing.
Yes.
That is elevating the status of those, that section of the women.
Correct.
Who otherwise were, but there are many more such problems that they face, and even other community people. And I don't know whether you know that, but it is under the law, Hindu law and Parsi law is the only law where it's so gender equal that even a husband can ask for alimony.
Yes, yeah. I'm aware. Yes.
So the Hindu law, the husband can ask for alimony, and the Parsi law, the other ones, they cannot. But I'm saying that's one of the things. But the other thing is that this needs to be had, because if you can have, when you have a uniform criminal law, there's a penal law, why not have a uniform civil law? Inheritance, that's where some section of the, I don't want to get in more into the debates, but inheritance is where some section of the society of some religion, they suffer very badly as compared to the other counterparts who have better rights in inheritance and things like that. So there are various aspects of these things which I would like to sort of, you know, get into it to bring about uniformity to a large extent.
And what's next for you? What's a work project or opportunity that has been lurking on the horizon?
So there is no opportunity lurking as of now, but what would I like to do? And I don't know, maybe, I don't know whether this is the platform to say, but maybe like to get into politics.
Oh.
Because I feel at some point of time, if that can be some difference that you can make to somebody's things with your experience, with one's experience and a little bit of background, then I think... Because everybody shuns politics. No, don't go to politics.
Yeah,
it's not a great place to be there. But then everybody does that, then that place remains the way it is.
Hmm.
So that's one desire. I don't know. Inshallah, let's see what happens.
So you will never retire, obviously. That word doesn't exist.
In fact, my dream is to die in the courtroom.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. I mean, it may sound very dramatic or it may sound very sort of, you know, theatrical, but that's really one of the things. I mean, that's really with your shoes on, as they call it.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's... No, there's no question of retiring. I hope God gives me that energy, because at the end of the day, you may want to do a lot of things, but you need to have the energy. But if I've given the energy, I mean, I would like to make the fullest use of it. Mm-hmm. Also, I would also indulge a lot in writing. That's what I plan to do now. Mm-hmm. Because... some of the things that I have seen in the course of my practice, it's really truth is stranger than fiction.
Yeah.
So would like to sort of share that. Only some could be very anecdotal, some could be, you know, life learning lessons. So it could be a mix of both, you know.
Yeah. And last question, you've been called many things, but what is the one word that you hope people will use to describe you in the future?
One word that people, I would like them to describe me. Yes. That she's one of the finest human beings.
That's nice.
That's all.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute honor talking to you. In the next episode of How I'm a Saba, I am speaking to the renowned literary editor and publisher, Chikki Sarkar.
You were listening to How I'm a Saba only on Luminary. The podcast is produced by Monisha Singhatyal and Rainshine Entertainment. Ritika Bajaj is our creative producer and Palash Kulkarni is our executive producer. The research for this episode was done by Anushka Mukherjee. The mix engineer for this episode is Ankit Thakur. Artist management by Versus Entertainment LLP. The music supervisor for the episode is Ankur Srivastav. The episode was recorded at Bayout Studios, Mumbai.